Time for the weekly edition of the Asia Pacific Report. And we're joined by Senusha Naidu, Senior Research Associate based with the Institute for Global Dialogue. Senusha, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, and how are you doing?
Very well, and yourself?
I'm well, thank you.
China caught in the crosshairs of the G7 summit while in the South China Seas. Indonesia is upping its defense spending by buying 8 Italian frigates, raising tensions with China.
Yeah, it's been a hectic week for China. I mean, China has been in the news now for all the right reasons and all the wrong reasons. But I think the G7 summit, the group of seven industrialized countries that just finished their meeting, their summit in Cornwall, the UK, over the weekend, produced quite an interesting summit report and discussions around China. And most of the discussion around China was how do we counteract China's rise in the global economy and its footprint in the international system. One of the key announcements that came out of that summit, but it was just a one line in the declaration, was this initiative proposed by Joe Biden of the U.S. called the Build Back Better World Initiative. That initiative is seen as a counteracting initiative where the group of seven countries, and in particular the U.S. that's leading this, is basically saying that there needs to be a return by the Western countries to the global infrastructure program. In other words, counteract to China's Belt Road Initiative, push back in terms of returning to the infrastructure investment dynamic, and more importantly, using the idea that the West needs to reclaim the space, talking about transparency and infrastructure partnership, but also about this idea that there's a need to bring back the standards, values, norms, and principles of the way the West does business. There's no flesh in that initiative yet. The initiative is targeting the 45 billion or trillion, I think, the number is staggering, $45 trillion deficit in the developing world when it comes to infrastructure financing, which they're arguing needs to be addressed by 2045 or 2040. But the problem with the initiative is that it seems to be much more symbolic, it seems to be much more rhetoric, and it's really just nothing more than saying, well, we don't want China to become as entrenched in the global economy. We don't want countries in the developing South to be only looking towards China for infrastructure financing. The problem is that initiative needs traction, it needs financing, and it's about bringing in the private sector. You've got to have a whole host of proposals to be able to bring the private sector in. So right now, it's very much caught in the crosshairs of what the G7 sees as a pushback against China. And the Chinese have responded and said, this is a political competition, this is uncalled for. So there's this whole kind of geostrategic competition coming about. And for Asia, for South America, for Africa, et cetera, the developing world in general, you get caught in those crosshairs of what you're saying is a very aggressive, not necessarily by all G7 members, but really by the U.S. And, of course, when the declaration was being finalized, the summit declaration of the G7, there were issues that, for example, Germany didn't want to take on such an aggressive tone towards China, because the EU has also been talking to China in terms of the economic dynamics. And so there was a kind of toned-down approach. I think it was just one line that mentioned this BPW initiative. But again, you're beginning to see that we're kind of going back into a Cold War redux with regard to how aggressive Washington is becoming around this initiative to push back the Belt Road program by China, which is quite a massive, broad global development program by the Chinese in terms of their ambitions. And linked to all of this, is what's happening in Southeast Asia, where China is also beginning to feel or see how other countries like Indonesia are beginning to think about their own military spend, upping that military spend to modernize their defense fleet, their military fleets and so forth, their hardware and software, because there's also the question of the territorial challenges in the South China Sea, but also the fact that countries like Indonesia are beginning to say that their sovereign maritime their sovereign maritime interests are also being compromised by the Chinese. There's this special, there's this economic zone, a special kind of zone of access that for a country like Indonesia has not really been pushed in the context of saying, you know what, we can all access the marine security, the fishing, etc., in the Southeast Asia region. And so there's this tension that also is also mounting in terms of how China is being looked at as a very aggressive or a very dominant actor in Asia, in ranging from the whole coast of the Southeast Asian zone across the Asia-Pacific region. And so by Indonesia buying 8 frigates from an Italian defense manufacturing company signals not only the modernization, increasing their defense spending, but it also signals that countries in the Asia-Pacific, and in particular in terms of the ASEAN, are beginning to say, you know what, we can't just leave it to external actors, or we can't just let China become quite dominant. But it poses a challenge to China, and also to the fact that the external factors like the U.S. involved in the South China Sea, also getting involved in the military dynamics of the South China Sea and in Asia Pacific, tends to challenge the Chinese in their own region. And it also tells China that countries like Indonesia, etc., are feeling as if they need to be much more on guard when it comes to China. And in certain ways, I think it has to do with China, the way in which the Indonesians a couple of weeks ago had two of their fleets, I think it was one of the submarines, disappear. They had to deal with the fact that they're dealing with aged and old age kind of software and hardware. And so buying these 8 frigates are going to be trying to increase their defense. But it's not coming without any controversy. Domestically in Indonesia, the Indonesian opposition and I think the general public are asking the question, why are you spending so much of money in a time of COVID-19 when there are domestic concerns, when there are domestic issues to deal with the pandemic, that we need the money for more humanitarian, for better healthcare, etc. And I think the other challenge is the fact that when you look at the it's not a done deal yet. When you look at the actual leaked defense document, there's speculation that 2 of those frigates are going to be used frigates that the Italian army is going to put that is going to decommission. Again, these are things we need to think about, because as much as we got the external actors, in particular countries like Italy, in the military build-up of modernizing the Indonesian army, I think the challenge is, again, how do companies like the Italian defense company is selling old age as well, or decommissioned equipment. And I think that's a problem for the Indonesians. But in terms of the geostrategic and maritime questions, the whole area of the Asia-Pacific is becoming much more militarized than we see elsewhere in the world.
Yes, well, certainly look out for that. And also in terms of the G7 developments, very reactionary from the United States, they've lost ground and pushing hard to try and gain that ground, at a desperate attempt. Let's move or stay within the Asia Pacific. Let's look at the Filipinos. Filipino President Duterte facing possible international criminal court probe for his war on drugs during the period of 2016 to 2019.
Yeah, so the International Criminal Court and the prosecutor, Benazura Fata, she's now decided that she wants to have a full investigation on the Filipino president's war on drugs. Now, about 30,000, if I'm not mistaken, 30,000 people have been killed or have been caught in some kind of fatality with that whole kind of crackdown on the drugs and the war on drugs and gangsters and whatever under the presidency of Duterte. And part of that has been the question of, has it really been, tackling the gangsters and tackling the war on drugs in the country, and how many of that has been civilian killings? And so what the ICC prosecutor is trying to do is develop a full-blown investigation, asking the question, is this crimes against humanity? Now, when you look at the situation in Philippines, you can see that the president is a very kind of hard-focused, aggressive president. He doesn't hold any punches. And of course, he used that as the war on drugs as also a part of consolidating and deepening his presidency, almost like a reign of terror. Now, the challenge would be that if they find the evidence that the ICC needs, then, of course, this raises questions for the Filipino president in terms of how he wants to create a political dynasty in Philippines with. When we spoke the last time about his daughter being a possible successor for him, he wants to keep the reins, etc. And this will raise important challenges for him, both in terms of his ambitions as leaving a political legacy, but also in terms of the political dynasty that he wants to create in the context of the political, the presidency and so forth. It's still early days. I think that the challenge is really going to be the kind of evidence that the ICC needs to put together to then bring the case forward and to then lodge the case in the ICC. But we also got to remember that the ICC is also going through its own kind of political identity, challenges of credibility, legitimacy. There's been questions about why the ICC doesn't prosecute or take on other countries because of the fact that, for example, the U.S. has its own kind of criminal procedure that it does at its own discretion. It's not a signatory to the ICC. So there's all these different dynamics, and I think the ICC is also going to deal with the fact that, you know, in a changing world where impunity seems to be reign much more superior, how does it deal with the questions of crimes against humanity and challenges that whole credibility question when it comes to the to its own positioning in terms of international law and what its mandate is. So I think this is going to be a watching brief for us.
Britain and Australia have struck a new free trade agreement as UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson seeks to expand commercial ties with countries around the world after Brexit. So what is this agreement all about?
Well, this is an important agreement. So when we look at the G7, there's this whole tension in the G7 between France and the UK with the EU. Part of the challenge is that the UK has to now start negotiating independent free trade agreements because it's no longer part of the EU. It can't rely on the EU trade protocol because it's basically removed itself from that trade protocol, and that's what the Brexit was about. So we won't talk about the Northern Ireland question because the Northern Ireland question is posing a whole lot of challenges for the EU, for the UK, because the EU doesn't want to relent on the idea that the customs union needs to remain because Northern Ireland is still part of the customs union of the EU, but also because the question here has to do with the hard and soft border. So I think what the EU is saying is that you keep the customs union in Northern Ireland, but the hard border cannot be put into effect, because if you create a hard border, then the EU, then you're actually saying Northern Ireland is not part of the UK. And Boris Johnson and the Conservatives and those that believe in empire still think that Northern Ireland needs to be part of the UK. So it's all of those tensions. So this Australian free trade agreement hasn't been signed yet, but they're talking about it in a very real way. It's about basically enabling the UK to find traction in markets outside of the EU. And so it's a very strategic and important trade agreement, because it will then reestablish and strengthen bilateral relations between Australia and the UK. It will also enable the UK to have access to the Australian market, where you reduce tariffs and non-tariff barriers, and of course enabling the UK through Australia to go into regional markets in the Asia Pacific and in the Pacific itself. For Australia, it's basically getting access into the UK's market, but more specifically around agriculture. Now, this is where the controversies start to come into play, because the controversies around agriculture means that the UK will have to start reducing tariff barriers and protectionist measures to its agricultural industry. This is not sitting well with the Farmers Association. This is not sitting well with the agricultural constituency, etc., in the UK, because one of the so-called addendums or part of the free trade agreement is that there'll have to be a 15-year period in which tariffs around beef imports, tariff around sugar imports and other fruit, etc., will be reduced over that 15-year period. In addition, there'll be reductions or reframing of the issues around sanitary and phytosanitary requirements. And this actually refers to your hygiene in your warehouses, in your slaughterhouses, in your production chain, etc. Now, what the UK agricultural sector is saying is that this will make it difficult for UK farmers or the UK agricultural sector to compete, because as imports come through from the from Australia, the goods from Australia will be cheaper. It will be able to not be farmers and the agricultural sector in the UK will not be able to compete because of domestic pricing and trying to cover costs. Now, this means that the challenges for the UK Farmers Association or the agricultural sector means that they won't be producing for their own market. And I think that's going to be very critical to go forward and watch that.
Yes, certainly. So all the challenges that stem from Brexit. Sanusha, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the airwaves this morning. You have a lovely day. Thank you very much for your time.
You too. You have a lovely day, and hope the listeners also.
Thank you. Go well. Bye-bye.